Blog Talk Radio.
This is Wes Roberts with a quick note about tonight's show. It'll probably run out just before we finish. It's a pre-recording that ran slightly over 60 minutes, and with some apologies in advance for some echo effect that I was absolutely unable to get out of the recording. Aside from that, please enjoy Leslie Mitchell-Clark and Stu Bundy.
Good evening to everyone out there. Tonight, you have reached Contact Radio, and this is your host, Leslie Mitchell-Clark. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and also the producer of the show, Mr. Wes Roberts. Good evening, Wes. How are you?
Hey, Leslie. I'm very good. And isn't it amazing? We're down to one final guest before Ace.
I know. I was just saying, boy, we have had a most exciting ride on the show, being able to talk to all of these luminaries. I mean, a large amount of them have, of course, been on the show before, but we've had a succession of incredible guests. Glenn Caston, Stanton Friedman, some wonderful new people, some people from the world of shamanic Native American traditions, ancient archaeologists. We have had it all, and it has been a wonderful, wonderful, informative, invigorating ride, for sure.
Yeah, and besides a little preview of things that we'll be doing on Monday night, we're all looking forward to making ACE happen. So we're going to hit the floor running and looking good on Friday morning.
That's right, Alien Cosmic Expo. And if you do not have your tickets, I think there are still some tickets left, I hope. I haven't checked with the event promoters today, but you can certainly go online to aliencosmicexpo.com. And there are many levels of admission. You can get a weekend pass. You can come just for the day. And we have a variety of free events.
Yeah.
So be sure just to check out the website. We're looking forward to seeing you there this weekend. And we are very honored, as we said, this is the our last guest on the roster from Alien Cosmic Expo. And I think we've saved one of the best for last, certainly, because we're not going to pussyfoot around anything. We're going to talk about actual ufology, the investigations that are going on, the experiencers. We're going to really get into some nuts and bolts of that. And we're going to do so by talking to our wonderful guest, Mr. Stu Bundy. And Stu is the Deputy National Director of MUFON. That's the Mutual UFO Network. And that's MUFON Canada. And he is also the Provincial Director of MUFON Canada, MUFON Ontario, I suppose. So he is deeply involved with the organization, active with the organization. And we are very, very fortunate to have him with us this evening. And before we bring on Stu, I just want to wish everyone out there a very wonderful Father's Day. I hope you have been able to spend time with your father, but if not, enjoy just the celebration of that role, that important role. And I must say, in the Jewish tradition, I say this every year to the West, in the Jewish tradition, educators such as yourself are honored as parents. That's part of the deal. So Father's Day, that is acknowledging the incredible role that teachers and tutors and people that work with your children in sporting events or extracurricular events, the incredible role that they share in the raising of your children. So congratulations to you on another Father's Day.
Oh, thanks so much, Leslie. We've had this conversation before privately, and we don't have kids. But then again, over the past two decades, actually, if I really want to look at it, I've had 10,000 of them in class.
Yes, yes. You and your wife have been very busy. Are they all doing chores? That's what I want to know.
Well, they're all grown up. They left home before they came home.
That's a good one. How do I do that? Oh, man. Anyway, without further ado, I would like to welcome to the show Mr. Stu Bundy. Stu, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Leslie and Wes, for having me on. It's
Any chance we get to talk about MUFON, what's happening in the skies in Canada? We take the opportunity to talk. Absolutely.
Indeed. And, you know, Stu, I don't really know very much about how you actually became interested or invested in this type of research and how you first came to MUFON. We'd love to hear a little bit about you.
Oh, well, you know, for me, this has been an ongoing passion since I was a little kid. And so I've always been interested in the phenomenon, the subject. And, you know, when I learned about MUFON, I joined. And I always wanted to sort of, I felt like I needed to be a little more on the inside than, you know, just reading what's out there on the internet and seeing all the videos, et cetera. And this does give you an opportunity because, you know, as even just as a basic MUFON member, you get the alerts, the email alerts. You get the monthly journal, which keeps you updated on what's happening throughout the world, the international journal. Plus, you get, you know, discounts for our national convention and you know, clothing in our shop and stuff like that. You know, we always have to try and sell stuff. But the reason we have to try and sell things is because we're a volunteer organization. And what we kind of think, say MUFON is the voice of reason, or one of the voices of reason. And there's so many people out there, and there's so much anxiety, and we continually get sighting reports, and people say, I don't know what it is, please help me. We get a lot of people saying, please help me. So we'll send it back an email and say, listen, thanks for sending in your sighting report. We'll take a look at it. We'll investigate it. But, you know, just relax. You know, whatever's out there, we're pretty sure it's not going to hurt you. And it's just nice to know that people are out there that care and will respond to you. So we try and alleviate people's anxiety. We certainly try to investigate it. And so we have a whole bunch of different things that we do, first of all. And this is all pretty simple stuff. It's not serious FBI, CSI investigation, even though it is the sort of the first chapter when you have there's a big CSI investigative handbook. And, you know, what MUFON does is the first page of the first chapter, that's it. But, you know, we scratch the surface because we're not professionally trained. We are trained, but not by, actually, I got to take that back. We are trained by an ex-FBI guy. He's Texan, and he's a serious dude. So every year at the convention, you know, the investigators go a day early, and we do a full day of photo analysis, video analysis. They set up a landing site for us outside in the parking lot or in a field, and it's just like a police investigation. You cordon it off, you set up an HQ, you have people working the crowd, keeping them away, and you know, it may sound kind of silly, but what we want to do is get to a site before the police or the government, because once they get in there, you're not going to find out anything.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and we have a whole investigative kit that's very similar to the cops, where you know, we have plastered Paris in case there's any landing marks. We have a Geiger counter, EMF reader, you know, things like that. We have all the proper tools to take samples, and we are trained where and how many soil samples to take at different places. We have to mark off the entire area. So that part of it is very much like a police investigation. You know, they train us on how to talk to people and how to you know, proceed on interviews. And again, a lot of the stuff is taken out of the FBI handbook because you try and catch people in line, or try and catch them in their story, see if it's reliable or not.
Inconsistencies would be, I mean, I don't think a lot of these people are actually lying, but there may be inconsistencies that would point to certainly you got to look at the most rational explanation first, right?
Oh, absolutely, inconsistencies. But you do get people who are hoaxers, and so they're not very many, but that's where you catch them, when you actually talk to them, speak to them, and do an interview. And that's the number one thing for us is, you know, when we get these sighting reports in, we're looking for three big things. We're looking for photo, video, multiple witnesses. And the multiple witnesses, the best kind of multiple witnesses, are from two separate sites. And we had a perfect example of this last summer. in Penetanguishene, Ontario. Penetanguishene.
Yes.
I found out it's both the same place. I just shortened it.
Yeah, it is. It's on Georgian Bay. It's not that far from Parry Sound. I know it's
exactly,
and there's a massive prison complex there.
Yes, exactly. This was probably not associated with a prison breakout or anything. But what happened is this is a great a case that is still unexplained. We closed it as an unknown, pending more information. And what happened was this fella and his girlfriend came back from having dinner with his dad in Barrie. Drove home, arrived at midnight, let the dog out the back door. The dog went nuts, started barking. The man and his girlfriend walked out the back door, and there was this light just beyond the backyard hovering above the trees. And they said, "What the heck is that?" They were watching it. The woman took out her cell phone, tried to snap a shot. We have a really fuzzy photo. You can kind of see a circle. We had it analyzed. We couldn't do anything with it. You kind of see something. And according to them, this object circled the house once, then started climbing, started gaining altitude, did a bigger circle around the neighborhood, and shot off. They were freaked. And so I started an investigation. I handled this one personally, talked to the OPP, which they do have a detachment in Penetanguishene. Got to the top dog there, and he said, no, that would have been probably a fixed-wing aircraft or maybe a helicopter from Trenton, CFB Trenton, in Trenton outside of Belleville.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what are you talking about? Well, see, what happens is, he explained that when the boats there on Georgia Bay, they have life-saving pingers. And they set off this thing, and it will ping, ping, ping. It is an emergency broadcast, and that's how planes can vector in on ships and boats that are having trouble at sea or, on the Great Lakes. And he says probably what happens is a lot of people have these in their boats. They put the boats in the backyards. They go off, and, it's nothing more than that. So I said, okay, fine. So we kept digging. We finally got a hold of the people at Trenton. They go, no, not us. We didn't send anything at this time, this date. There were no alarms, no alerts went off, no ships at sea, no ships in the backyard, no nothing. He said, go back to the OPP. Went back to the OPP. He said, no, this is from Trenton. Go call them again. So we got the quintessential runaround, and we had to end it there. Meantime, the next day, we get a sighting report from a girl up the street. Same thing. Same description of the craft, of the object, and the same, it made the same circle. She saw it making the big circle around the neighborhood and then shooting off. So now we have two separate witnesses in separate locations, corroborative evidence, and this was exactly what we were looking for. So we went up there, we checked it out, really couldn't find anything else out, but that was big for us. So that's the sort of thing that we look for.
So when you speak to multiple witnesses, do they have to be separate geographically?
No. We have two separate kinds. We have a group, one or more people in the same location, a shared experience, and so we'll get them separately on the phone or in a different rooms, interview them separately, and we'll compare the stories. And that's great. Having more than one witness obviously gives credibility if the stories jive. But even better than that, as I mentioned, having two separate witnesses viewing the same event in separate places, I mean, that's huge. That's great stuff for us. So those are the sort of things that we do. Basically, when someone sees something, they want to. So if anyone's out there listening, they say, gee, I had this happen to me in 1990 or 2005 or 1975, you can still send in a sighting report. We added it basically. You say this. If you have had a sighting, and it was years ago, you can still go to our website, MUFON.com. You go to hit the tab that says File a Sighting Report, put in your sighting report, and at least we'll go into our database, and we have stuff to compare against other reports. And we're looking for patterns. That's what we're looking for. So people all over the world send in sighting reports. It goes to our big CMS. That's our case management system. And then it gets spit back out to the corresponding director of that region, whether it's a state or a province or a different country, Australia, New Zealand, Germany, that sort of thing. And then the director will send that sighting report out to the local investigators, and they'll start a case and they'll investigate it. So what the quickest thing that we do is we'll go to a piece of software called Stellarium, and anybody can download this off the internet. It's free. It shows you where the stars are, where the planets are, where the satellites are, where the International Space Station is at any given time. You can even go back in time. That's a huge tool for us, because especially in the summertime when the International Space Station does a pass, I mean, that thing is bright and it is moving quickly. And you know, typically we'll get a couple of sighting reports the next day, and we can track that down to the International Space Center, Space Station. Also, the star Sirius. It's a lot of times people will mistake that for an object, for a UFO, because when Sirius is kind of hanging there just above the horizon, because of all the atmosphere it has to go through, it twinkles and it changes color.
Yeah.
And you probably know, if you stare at a star or a planet long enough, if you really concentrate and stare at it, after a few minutes, it looks like it starts.
We're losing you a bit there.
A lot of times, we sort of try and figure out the satellites, the International Space Station. Then we'll go to a website called Radar Tracker 24, and wherever you are, you can punch up your map of Southern Ontario or Vancouver, New York, Miami, what have you, and it shows you all the planes that are coming in and out of the major airports, and these are commercial lines. It's a 320 or a 380 Airbus. It's a Boeing 737, like WestJet uses, or what have you. It tells the flight, Air Canada, you know, AC 1325, that sort of thing. And so you can also take a look at the patterns, go back in time, and see if there's anything corresponding to the place and time of the sighting in the sighting report. So that's another thing. What else we use? Well, we use Picasa, is a sort of like Photoshop, and we can put the if they have photos, we can put it in there. We can check to see if there's metadata, because a lot of times if someone does, you know, hoax you, they'll put it into Photoshop or they'll use some sort of software and they'll change it, and we can see right away if the metadata is not there, but it doesn't say what kind of camera, what's the aperture, that sort of thing, how many pixels. If all that stuff is missing, well, it's been altered, and that's a red flag there as well. Video, same sort of thing. And those are the things that we do just right off the bat to try and see if we can figure out what it is. If it isn't any of those things, well, then we'll get the witness on the phone, we'll do an interview, and we'll take it, you know, step by step.
Uh-huh. Now, Stu, do people tend to call you or call the MUFON organization if they have had to use the traditional categories, if they've had a different kind of a close encounter, if they've had something that maybe doesn't even involve a craft per se, do they call you when they've had these type of experiences? And if so, how do you proceed?
Oh, no, absolutely. Well, for example, we were dealing with a couple of folks who were seeing orange-red orbs. Now, you know, the orb phenomenon is a real phenomenon. We don't exactly know what they are. You know, I don't think anyone knows exactly what they are. A lot of people have some pretty good ideas, whether it's, you know, in the spiritual realm, whether it's interdimensional, you know, what kind of you know, power source it is, that sort of thing. But we're starting to get a lot more orb sightings. And, you know, we've got some from downtown Toronto, you know, in a park. And the fellow, you know, we did our interviews, he seemed pretty credible, and so that's the sort of thing we will do orbs. It's not, you know, typically in our wheelhouse, as we say,
mm-hmm.
But we do that. The other thing is the abduction phenomenon. And we have an art team, abduction research team, and that is headed up by Kathleen Martin. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, she and Stan Freeman, wrote the book, The Betty and Barney Hill Story.
Yes,
because Kathleen.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, she's the niece of Benny and Barney Hill, and she does great work with the abduction folks or the experiencers. And so if
either at this present time, are you seeing what kinds of shapes? Are you seeing some of these giant craft that look to be motherships, like giant triangles? What kind of stuff is happening in our Ontario skies and orbs?
Right, right. Well, do you want me to talk about those orbs again? Did we catch that on tape or no?
We're not sure if we got it. So if we could back up to orbs and talk a little bit about getting into abductions and experiencers and all that kind of thing, and then I'll figure out how to sew this thing together.
Okay, so you want me to talk about Kathleen Martin again?
Please.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, sure, yeah. So what we're seeing now is a lot more different things than your traditional, I saw a light in the sky and went zigzag, zigzag, because we do see a lot of those, or we're getting a lot of those sightings in. We're getting a lot more things like orbs that we traditionally did not use to, really investigate. But, a lot of people are thinking these are spiritual, interdimensional, a different kind of energy source. So we do investigate those. We had some very serious sightings in downtown Toronto that we took seriously and are investigating in a park. Also, with regards to what other kinds of craft that we're seeing now is we're seeing a lot of the traditional black triangles. And some of these are massive, 10 football fields big.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. We had a mini flap about half a year ago. And this was three very credible sightings in 1 week. The first one was in Montreal. We have Luigi Venditelli is our Montreal guy, and he does he specializes in black triangles and also abductions. So this was a very serious sighting in Montreal. 2 days later, another huge black triangle in Burlington, and this fellow was able to snap a photo. So we have a really bad outline of this object, but it had three lights on it, one in the middle, two on the tips. And then 2 days later in Fort Erie, this is the best one. This was two witnesses standing on the back porch having a smoke, and hey, thank goodness for the smokers in the world, because they're the folks who...
We know it.
Thank God.
Yeah, all of our sightings seem to start with, I was out having a smoke, and I looked up. And so I know it's a terrible, bad habit, but, we get a lot of good sightings from these folks.
That's true.
We'll keep smoking.
So these guys were on the back porch. They looked up. They saw this massive black triangle. And what they were doing is they were watching planes land at Buffalo Airport. So they're across the river in Fort Erie watching the planes land in the Buffalo Airport. This thing was coming down literally under the glide path of the jets that were landing. And according to them, and I still have it written down, where is it here? It dematerialized.
Mm.
So needless to say... they were both fairly shaken up. The one fellow went on the radio with me. He came to one of our meetings. The other fellow will not talk. He does not want to be interviewed. He was really shaken up. So this is something that they both saw. I don't know about the second guy who wouldn't talk to us, but the one witness, it was very credible. There's no alcohol involved. He's not a drug user. He's a working guy, very solid. A very solid person. So we take that one very credible. But anyway, we do our investigation. So we call NAV Canada, Transport Canada, the OPP. We call the Buffalo Airport, nothing out of them. Even MUFON New York, because it was New York State. We were working with them on this. They didn't hear anything about it. So what's going on in the skies? Well, there's these black triangles. And so you know, we think that's a real phenomenon. Now, the question is, it's down to two groups. It's us or it's them.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't at all be surprised if it's us.
Yeah.
Back engineered, reverse engineered technology from back in 1947 at Roswell,
yeah.
You know, or from many other things that we don't even know about that the U.S. government has confiscated and found and reverse engineered. Because in the 70s and the 80s, when people were in California and Nevada and Washington State were putting all these sightings of these smaller black triangles, well, what it turned out to be, most of them were the prototype and the test flights for the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter.
Yeah, true. Well, you know, Captain Randy Kramer, Captain K, has talked extensively about these giant black triangles that, of course, had been reverse engineered that were used for transport, for intergalactic possibly, but certainly for space transport. So it's not a big, and he's not the only one that's talked about this. So it's certainly, as you say, it's not a big leap to think about reverse engineering of some of this craft, because certainly most people kind of agree that that's what's happened, that that's how the military-industrial complex has risen to such, to really be a shadow government. And I'm not a paranoid person, but I think it's, I think when we just look at human nature, when we look at the nature of greed and some of these other, you know, character aspects that we have, it's very easy to understand how such a situation should occur, and how even if we were offered help, as many individuals have claimed, particularly during the Eisenhower administration, that we rejected that help. It's uh-huh. all very understandable when you think about human nature. And I personally don't think that we need any help being really terrible to each other. So, I don't think we need to look outside of our civilization for the things that are really wrong. And that's why I think it's sometimes maybe counterproductive to focus heavily on certain conspiracy theories that take away our responsibility for our actions.
That well put. I totally agree. And you know, it's I love listening to people like Paul Hellyer and Stanton Friedman when they say, you know, of course, if these other civilizations are looking down upon us, well, we're small tribal people that are continually warring and killing each other, and so why would they even want to come down and you know, make contact with us at this point? So, but getting back to that the military-industrial complex, yeah, I mean, when you have power, you don't want to give up power, and you know, when you talk about people like Bill Clinton, who goes public and says, "Hey, listen, there's a government within the government, and I don't control that."
Yeah.
Then you know something's up, and I can't imagine anyone will ever be able to crack that. Certainly in our lifetimes. So it'd be interesting to see what happens, unless there is a full disclosure, like you know the work that Stephen Bassett's doing,
yes,
where
yes.
he can get a critical mass. He talks about
with the
population all over the world. You get a critical mass of people. They finally say, you know, it's like that old movie Network. I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. If you get enough, you know, people who do that around the world, well, then that takes the power away from the black government.
Absolutely,
you know.
they can be circumvented, and that's part of what is happening with just the dissemination of information. You know, the internet has made a lot of that possible, certainly that is what is happening. Their power is being taken away through the admission of truth. And now we're living in a time where we're getting a lot of deathbed confessions, right? A lot of individuals who suffered under a threat of death, under military silence, are now coming forward, on their deathbeds, literally. So there's everything is just seems to be more and more confirmed with regards to what we know, I think. I wanted to ask you, Stu, now we talked a little bit about orbs. We were talking about orbs for a moment, and you know, are they Earth energy? Are they interdimensional? You know, what are they? And I'm reminded of, you know, sort of the work of Patty Greer and other individuals who have a lot to do with crop circles. And there seems to be a good deal of footage, and you can speak to whether or not this is legitimate footage, but there seems to be a lot of footage involving orbs actually creating the crop circles. I know Patty has a lot of this type of stuff. And certainly it makes sense, I think we talked about this a bit last week, that that any sophisticated intelligence who can work with energy, why wouldn't they use Earth energy, Earth plasma, to as a tool? You know, why would they bring stuff with them if they didn't have to?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I'm looking forward to seeing, listening to Patty and seeing her presentation at the Alien Cosmic Expo next week. Or this coming week. It's coming coming up pretty quick.
Coming right
and,
up.
You know, because I've studied a little bit, and I've you know, two summers ago went to Wiltshire in England. You know, did Stonehenge and the Great Avebury Stone Circle,
oh,
which to me, that's even more phenomenal than Stonehenge in my opinion.
It is.
You know, and then you know, we went to the Crop Circle HQ. They take this school when it's closed down the summer, and they set up their headquarters there, and they have maps and they have daily updates, and you get there in the morning and okay, here's the new one, and here's the field, and here's a map to get to it. It's all very cool stuff, and everybody is so into it. I absolutely loved it, and also. What was interesting was just down the road from the headquarters, the Crop Circle headquarters, was a little airstrip. And so, you know, for 60 pounds, this a pilot will take you up and give you a tour of the Crop Circle. So being the skeptical person, I got a hold of this pilot, you know, we went up in this little tiny plane, and I said, hey, what's the deal? What do you think? Because, you know, you figure pilots are a pretty black and white. You know, it's if you're not serious, you could lose your life when you're flying. So I said, what do you think? He goes, well, I'll show you. And he says, I'll show you the ones that the drunks from the pub do, and I'll show you ones that I don't understand. And so we were flying, right? There's this famous white chalk horse on the side of the hill, solitary hill. And so you fly by that, and you go, just wow. And then you see these unbelievable designs, and he says, I don't know who could do that. And then we flew over, and there's this bad circle with and he says, those are drunks. and so you can from the air you can really tell the difference. And then you know you go into them. Now obviously you hear the same stories that I do. Some people feel tingling, their hair stands on it. They can feel the energy. I'm not that intuitive or sensitive, so I didn't get any of those feelings. But when I examined the stocks, you know, they were bent, but not broken.
Right.
And it was just really, really bizarre. And there's just no way that it can lay down like that and be interwoven like that. You know, I mean, they talk about, well, so they have different changes of the wind, and we have swirling wind, and we can do this, but there's no way that this one circle that I was in, there's no way that could have happened. So that was really, really a mystery for me. And so again, I'm looking forward to listening to Patty for sure.
She's got some amazing stuff. In fact, I don't think it was Patty, but someone sent me something a couple of days ago that was so fascinating. Apparently, Carl Sagan, long passed away now, was responsible for sending some type of a digital signal. Now, this, again, I'm not talking about the SETI people. They had nothing to do with this. This was purely a binary signal that was sent, which he devised. And it had, you know, our DNA, our physical likeness, you know, but again, in a binary form. So this was years ago that he sent this out into space by some means. I'm not certain how. And I believe it was last month, again, in the old stomping grounds, Wiltshire, a crop circle was formed that was in fact an answer to Carl Sagan's initial foray. It was a representation of DNA. It was again in binary code. It was a representation of beings, not very dissimilar from us. So that showed up, and also a duplicate of the original message that Carl Sagan had sent. And this was maybe, this had to been more than a decade ago, because it was in the early days of computer, the ability to do something like this.
Oh, that's phenomenal, and also reminds me of there's a website and organization called Open Minds, and they've got a great website. They do a lot of great research. Their logo is one of the famous crop circles, which is pi. You know, the 3.12, and for that to show up in a crop circle is, to me, it just really blows my mind. I love that stuff.
Well, if there's an intergalactic means of communication, it's going to be math, most likely, and I think even though the laws of physics can be mutable or they're more involved than we currently understand, there are certain basic tenets of physics that are going to be common, I think, to all life, really, if you will. There was even Patty Greer even told me about some crop circles that were chemical formulas for how to grow increased crops without the kind of stupid pesticides and genetic engineering that we're doing now. This was in a totally different way of doing it. But she says that they have the benevolent beings are communicating recipes on how to feed the world.
And all we have to do is listen.
Yes, all we have to do is listen, which is very hard for a lot of people.
And it's ironic, too, because Patty was the one that put in my brain, let's bring crops back to crop circles, basically.
Yes. Well, apparently, some of these areas where there have been actual large crop circles do grow grain quadruple the normal speed of grain growth. So they're not only giving us a recipe, but they're showing us how it's done.
Yeah, no, that is truly amazing, and I agree with you. There is it's an energy that there are orb sightings prior to the crop circle showing up. So there's a famous video showing these two orbs zipping across a field from a static camera up in the hills. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, there's a circle in the field. So that is certainly known to be associated with them. Aside from orbs, we also deal a lot with experiencers. And that's where, Kathleen Martin comes into play, and she is the niece of Betty Hill, famous Betty and Barney Hill.
Yes.
So we deal with that. We can hook people up with Kathleen's organization. It's a subset of MUFON. It's called ART, Alien Research. It's the Alien Research Team, and so they can help people if they truly have had experiences and they're having trouble dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you. Well, I'm sure you've probably dealt with experiences.
That's exactly what I do, Stu, on a full-time basis. I think I'm one of the few hypnotherapist that is completely dedicated to this particular type of work, which involves not only regression techniques, but dealing with often a very specific type of post-traumatic stress disorder. Eliminating the fear, because I'm all about the healing. So yes, the stories that are rather the experiences that people relate, all of this is incredibly fascinating and absorbing. But my goal is to integrate these into the person because, as you know, many experiencers suffer from an array of, I would have to say, neurotic behaviors. Or it's not unusual to see huge amounts of social anxiety, paranoia. Some of these people have difficulty holding jobs. They almost across the board have difficulty sleeping. And, of course, wouldn't you if you were worried about what was going to happen as soon as you closed your eyes?
Oh, absolutely. No, and one of the things that this ART team does is they will come back to us and say, this witness needs to find somebody. So for you and your organization, it's great to have you there, and we will certainly use your expertise when people reach out to us to looking for help.
Wonderful. I am always available. I feel like this is my calling, and I do bring a good deal of experience to the table, so that would be fantastic. We're going to just take a brief pause for a moment, Stu. I just want to thank our sponsors, because without our sponsors, there would be no Contact Radio. So we do want to acknowledge them. And Wes, if you'd like to help me with that,
absolutely. Well, let's start with the folks that are organizing the Alien Cosmic Expo.
Mm-hmm.
So there are three main players. We'd like to thank them all: Joanne, Heather, and Les. And there are probably more. And there are more actually than that, but let's say those people are the impetus, and yourself, Leslie, are behind this as well. So our thanks to the organizers of the expo, which is coming right up this week, and to Variety Store Productions.
That's right, our friend Greg Summer. And we'd also like to thank Conspiracy Culture Books, our friend Patrick White, who is not only runs that marvelous resource for information, he runs various lecture series, and he's also involved with the Modern Knowledge
sure,
folks
yeah.
with our friend Victor Vigiani and
yeah.
and David Whitehead mm-hmm. and who am I forgetting? Oh my goodness.
Yes, it's okay.
Oh, I can see him in my brain. Oh no, don't be mad at me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it'll
we love Patrick White and all those guys at Modern Knowledge, and they have a big event coming up in August, so you should check that out. We'd like to thank them. We would also like to thank Enchanted Reveries Jewelry, our ongoing sponsor. We love that stuff, and if you're interested in seeing some very beautiful jewelry with a metaphysical and magical tinge, just log on to enchantedreveries.etsy.com. And we'd also like to thank the Canadian Hypnosis Convention, which is happening in October, and they are our sponsors as well. Have I forgotten anybody else?
Well, let's do two more. One would be Euphoria.
Of course.
Our friend James and all our other friends at Euphoria, thank you very much. And we should also thank MUFON, because the awareness that they bring to us and that we might bring to them as well helps us all.
Absolutely. Which reminds me, I'd love to get a MUFON sticker to put up on our show page. So if you can help me with that, Stu, that'd be cool.
Absolutely.
All right. So we are back, folks, with Stu Bundy, who is a field investigator, a administrator of MUFON, both on the provincial level and on the national level. And we've just been chatting about all things to do with the sightings. Now tell me, Stu, you know, we're going to be in Brantford, obviously, for the Alien Cosmic Expo, and before we get into, you know, what you're going to be doing there, I wonder if you had any thoughts as to why there are so many sightings in Brantford, Ontario. Do you think it's the presence of the Six Nations Reserve and their relationship with the Sky People? Do you think it's geophysical? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it certainly could be a combination of all of them. We get a lot of sighting reports from First Nations folks. They are very in tune. They're very spiritual. They're, they have a connection that most of everyone else doesn't. Whether it's, you know what it is. It's just their upbringing and their history,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that most of everybody else we're stuck in our daily grind. Oh, my goodness, I got to pay the mortgage, and I got to pick up the kids, and I hate my boss, and I got to work, and I'm tired, and you know we're caught in the daily grind, and a lot of times we lose sight of a lot of things that are important, to look up in the sky, and you know thank goodness you're alive, and that sort of thing, you know, but that area we're getting a lot. In fact, we had a really good solid video come in 3 weeks ago, and we had a MUFON meeting up in Brantford a couple weeks ago, and we talked about this this video. It's being analyzed right now. It is a it's a light in the sky. It's at dusk. We also have another. We go to weather sites like Wonderground, and you can go back in history and see where the wind is coming from, etc. So we figured out this light was going against the wind. It wasn't a plane. It wasn't a Chinese lantern. It was not a drone. And so this is a very, very solid video that we have from Brantford 3 weeks ago. So we'll be talking about that at the expo as well. And in Hamilton, you know, we're starting to investigate this fellow who sees shadow people.
Mm.
We've interviewed him enough that we think he's for real, and we're going to set up cameras, and he's telling us that the shadow people have given him the okay for us to videotape. So we shall see, but we typically don't get into that realm. However, what made it intriguing for us, and again, this is in the Hamilton area, very close to Brantford, is that this fellow would wake up and he would see visions at the foot of his bed. And they'd be young children, they'd be older people, they'd be wearing clothes from the 1800s, things like that. So I'm thinking spirits, ghosts. But then what happened is one night, it almost like the face melted away and there was a reptilian.
Oh.
So that, he said, it really freaked him out. And he said that what these are reptilians that are using these spirits as masks. So it gets really complicated. But what we're going to try and do is we're going to try and photograph this and see if we can find anything. But the whole shadow people subject is another one of those where it's not typically in our wheelhouse, but if it has to do with some sort of alien, for example, the reptilian, well, then now we've got our interest, and now we think we can at least legitimately investigate this, as opposed to sending him to a paranormal group, which it might be, if it's some sort of a spirit or ghost event, that they may be able to do a better investigation than us. But that area, and going back in history, there's been a lot of sightings. So I think it's probably a combination of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hot spot.
It is indeed. And, what in speaking about shadow people, certainly this isn't the first time that I have heard experiencers discuss the presence of shadow people. And there is an ongoing discussion in the paranormal and ufology community about what are these beings? Are they in fact discarnate entities? Are they negative entities? Are they interdimensional beings? But again, there does seem to be some relationship between the presence of shadow people and experiencers. And also, as I'm sure you're well aware, and for interfacing with Kathleen, some beings who interact with us are very fond of disguises, of using staging or appearing as relatives, or sometimes I think it's done out of a genuine desire not to frighten. But there isn't a complete understanding of our emotional makeup or what really scares us, I think. So some of this fear that occurs is probably unintentional, is my my belief.
Oh, I agree as well. I think a lot of times one of the terms the UFO folks, investigators use are screen memories. So they will show you an owl, a big white owl, or they will show you a relative or something like that, so as not to to frighten you. But again, it really sometimes blows my mind if you think, I'm a what if guy. What if it's real?
Yeah.
What if it's really happening? And then it just throws out everything that you think you know about life and about reality. For example, there's a we hooked up with this TV producer. He won an Emmy for Mystery Hunters. If you remember that show.
Oh, are you talking about Sid? Sid Goldberg.
Sid, yeah.
Sid, mash to Sid.
have you had him on your show? If you not,
well,
you
we're
should.
Actually, believe it or not, Stu, we are actually both of us very involved in a pilot that he shot, which was originally called The Alien Agenda. I'm not sure what it's being called now, but we're going to show the trailer for it during our presentation at ACE. So Sid is actually going to be shooting footage and talking to people throughout the entire convention.
Well, then I won't spoil the surprise. But what happened last summer with, you may have been involved in this project where it was a woman from, an experiencer from Michigan. And,
yes.
Sid was looking for someone to do an extraction,
yes,
of an implant.
Yes.
And eventually found one in Montreal. He found a plastic surgeon.
Yes.
And he showed me video of the hypnosis session.
That was, me.
Oh my goodness. He wouldn't tell me anything. I mean, he said, no, Stu, this is, I'll show you this this piece of video in the trailer he showed me at the Modern Knowledge Tour on the Disclosure Tour a couple of months ago in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
But last summer, you know, I saw him at this. It was a retreat, you know, north of Toronto. It was an alien contact retreat. And he said, "Stu, you want to see something?" I said, "Absolutely." So we went out to the parking lot, and his trunk, he had the implant.
Oh, yes.
And it was in a little jar, a little container of saline solution, like two little BBs, you know, a BB rifle?
Yep.
Stuck together. It had a little bit of flesh still hanging off one end. And I held it in my hands, and I said, "Wow, you know, what if?
Yeah.
You know, what if this really was, you know, implanted by some alien race into a human being? And here I am holding the jar." It's just phenomenal. Now, of course, yes, she could have been shot by her brother when they were four, goofing around the backyard and forgot about it. Maybe people roll over at night and they roll on their pencil and the lead gets jammed in their arm, and then 10 years later they think it's an implant. I mean, this stuff like that happens. But you know, this was analyzed. You know, and
yeah.
You know, I don't know if I should be saying what the results are. I'll let you do it. But
it's still, there's still a little bit out. The jury's still a little bit out as far as the results. But one thing that is so unique about this implant, which certainly I was able to feel underneath her skin, you know, before it was extracted, is it was magnetic. They were able to take little magnets and place it on her surface skin, and the implant itself was magnetic. So that is, in itself, no one can answer that question. No doctor, no chemist, nobody can answer the question as to what were the properties. Now, unfortunately, I think that because of the way the implant was preserved after extraction, we're not sure how much more information we can get out of it. But certainly, they don't really know what it is. They know there are metals involved, but they, as far as I know, through the mass spectrometer, there are still mysteries.
Yeah, absolutely. So if millions and millions of people are experiencing abductions and you know, close encounters and things like that, and implants, et cetera, well then, you know, that's one of the problems I have, not problems, one of the things I'm grappling with MUFON is that, you know, we're scratching the surface. We're trying to explain lights in the sky. Well, then you take to the next step. Well, the lights in the skies become encounters. Then you have experiencers, and you have implants and all the whole array of experiences and problems that come with that. And so then if you take to the next step, where I'm almost at the next step, and you know, this is where you want to join Victor Vigiani's group, it's exopolitics. Well,
yeah.
where you've come to the realization, hey, this is, we know what's in the sky. We know what's happening to millions of people on Earth. Let's just go to the next step and say, let's make it public.
Yeah.
You know, let's get the government to open up. And so that's where a lot of people are going to now, you know. But no, we're still there for the public. We are transparent. We're the voice of reason. We will tell you what we find, even if we don't find anything. You know, we'll return your emails. You know, and that's why we're there. We're here to help.
And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing, because this is not going away. You guys are just going to get busier. Is my personal opinion on all of this. And also, I think it's important to bear in mind that many of the people that have sightings do not have a conscious memory of perhaps a more in-depth involvement. So, you know, we sometimes find that through an innocent sighting, that will trigger certain memories, and people will come to see someone like me. And so people who have sightings can sometimes also be experiencers, and I think we're going to see more of that as well. Now, we just have a few more minutes, Stu, but I want you to tell me a little bit, if you can. You mentioned something really fascinating that you're going to be discussing at the Alien Cosmic Expo, and what is the best way for folks to get a hold of you or an appropriate investigator?
Well, absolutely. What? How much time? We have 30 seconds or 3 minutes?
Oh, no,
we've
got
or?
More time than that, Stu.
We got a few minutes.
You can hang loose.
Okay.
We got about 10
okay.
minutes.
Okay, good. Well, the best way to get hold of us is MUFON.com. And it will direct you on how to put a sighting report in. It'll come if it's Toronto, Ontario, if it's Quebec, if it's Edmonton, Vancouver. It'll come to me, and I will hand it out to that particular investigator across Canada. What we're really excited about, well, there's two things, coming up at the ACE this week. For the first time ever, an experiencer, Emily Trim, is going to be speaking and taking questions. Now, she was part of a group of children, school kids, back in 1994 in Rua, Zimbabwe, that saw a disc land in the schoolyard during lunchtime. Two beings came out and interacted with 62 of the kids, 62 of the 200 kids at the school. Emily's parents are missionaries. They worked for the Salvation Army. That's why they were there. That's why she was there as a young girl. Anyway, the parents packed up and took off after this and came back to Canada. And the reason why MUFON's involved is because our Montreal investigator, Luigi Venditelli, befriended Emily and is now working with Emily. Because what's happening to Emily is she is still in contact with these beings. It's just that, again, blows my mind. So she is going to, and it's very difficult for her to talk about it publicly, but she is going to be there. We're going to talk about the documentary of the Rua, Zimbabwe, the aerial elementary school documentary, which, we're doing some crowdfunding. We're trying to raise $50,000 to get this documentary finished because it's a very important story. You know, all these kids had a universal thought telepathically put into their head or spoken to them, which was, you've got to save the planet. You're ruining your environment.
Yeah.
Things like that, And so it's going to be amazing to hear Emily. She's also, for her own therapy, she's painting. She's doing artwork of these beings. And so she's going to be selling some of them, and the money all goes towards getting this documentary finished. So it'll be great to see her. Luigi Venditelli is a great ufologist. He's a great investigator. Yeah. Luigi's also investigating an ongoing sighting in the Laurentians. It's been going on for 2 years. I went up there last winter. I missed it by one day. These lights come out and fly around a couple of times a week. It's been across the news occasionally, but it's a phenomenon that's going on up there, and it's very close to an old NORAD base that's been closed down for decades. And Luigi's gone to the base. He's investigated it. He's searched things. All the gates are open. Anybody can go in there and look around. The houses are falling down. The buildings are a mess. It's deserted, which would be a great cover for an underground base.
Yeah, no
kidding.
Hey, right?
Look, come on and take a look. You'll never find anything. but this is amazing, and it's still going on. As Luigi dug and investigated, he found out that the sightings have been going on for decades. All of these locals are coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, yeah, we see this, we see that. We've seen entities in the forest. That area is a hot spot. And we don't know whether it's the minerals, if some alien or race from a, another world is coming, and if they're mining minerals, what kind of special minerals are up there, or what are they getting out of the ground? So that is a really interesting investigation. So Luigi will talk a little bit about that as well. We'll talk about the Brantford sighting, what we do, and we're going to recruit people. We want members. So that's how we stay alive. It's only $35 a year to be a MUFON member. And as I mentioned, you get all the updates, you get the journals, you get the stories, you get the sighting reports, and it helps keep our organization alive.
Yeah.
And if you're really into it, we want you to join up and then become an investigator, because we need these sightings are just rolling in, and they're getting more and more every year. So we need more people. And if it's something that you'd like to be involved in, sort of be a bit of an insider